From the studios of Radio Sai at Prashanthi Nilayam, I am Chandu Vijay and this is Love to Love. On the last week's show, we had a special guest in the show, Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and we discussed his poetry. How poetry, like music and other art forms, is such a great tool in connecting with our divine self. And today, we are continuing the discussion and we have some amazing poems and music in store for you. Now, to give a brief introduction to Sri Suresh Rao, he hails from Mumbai and is a chemical engineer by profession. He got his bachelor's from the University of Mumbai and master's from the University of Arkansas, USA. He served the Department of Atomic Energy, Mumbai, as a Class 1 officer and later joined the Bhabha Atomic Research Center in Bombay and worked there for 19 years till he retired at the age of 60. He is now settled in Prashanthi Nilayam, serving Bhagwan through Radio Sai from the year 2004. He is also a poet and has published 3 books, out of which 2 are Book of Poems and the third one is on Bhajagovindam by Sri Adi Shankaracharya. So with that short introduction, Suresh Rao sir, welcome once again to Love to Love.
Thank you, Chandu.
Sir, last week we discussed few of your poems and they were mostly based on Swami's Chinnakathas and stories from the Upanishads. So what do you have in store for us today?
Yeah, today it's a little different. I thought I will bring out my first book, very first book, which deals with Swami's teachings and more of his philosophy. And later part, of course, there is some Chinnakathas, but otherwise it is mostly on Swami's teachings and what Swami has to teach us about philosophy.
Wonderful. And when was this book first released? Which year was this book released?
Well, actually the manuscript was blessed by Swami in early 2011.
Okay.
And got published for birthday of 2011.
2011. Wonderful.
And released on that day.
Okay. Great. So let's start with the first poem that we have and it is titled, Come to Me with Empty Hands, Say Sai. So like how we did last week, I will read out the first few paragraphs of the poem and then you can let the listeners know what the poem is all about. Come to me with empty hands, say Sai. That is the title of the poem and the poem goes thus. You come with hands full of clutter. Can Swami fill them up, O brother? Come with empty hands unfolded, that they may to the brim be loaded. Come to me with empty hands, say Sai. How to empty your hands, pray? What are they filled up with, say? Hands' hearts are filled with toys sought, sense objects, ephemerals, knots the lot. Come to me with empty hands, say Sai. Mental blocks, emotional baggage stuffed, head loaded, gnarled heart, hands duly cuffed. Unrequited egocentric pinings, longings, enjoyments, attachments, quaint belongings. Come to me with empty hands, says Sai. And the poem goes on. Sir, so why don't you tell the listeners what this poem is all about and how did you get the inspiration to write this poem?
Well, this is one of the famous, I came across Swami's discourses where he made this statement, come to me with empty hands. And I was a little puzzled what exactly it should mean. So whatever I thought was right answer, I tried to express that in my poem. It is actually to come with a pure heart, unsullied by ego and desires. When you approach Swami, see. Mostly we don't do that. We come with so many other
yes.
Items in mind, you know. And as you said, we don't have to... coming with a pure mind and heart is very difficult at first,
yes.
At least for the first few times
it
when
is,
you come
it
to
is.
Swami.
Of course, as yeah. This poem is... it reflects something that all of us struggles with. Like some struggle, of course, more than the others. So in your life, can you share how you are able to empty your hands? Like was it more difficult to do at certain points in life, that is in your youth or middle age or now? Or does it get easier with time?
I think it gets easier with maturity,
okay.
Spiritual maturity.
Yes.
And time is incidental. But as I said, Brahmacharya is a state where you... try to avoid many of these desires and all, and so heart is clean.
Yes, yes.
To maintain that even when you are in the grahastha stage and then vanaprastha stage is what you have to aim at actually. And I found it difficult during the grahastha stage because so many duties and so many obligations are there. We get involved with so many worldly activities. But now that, you know, I would say I'm in the vanaprastha stage, so gradually it's coming back, you know, this empty heads or empty hearts.
Yes, yes.
And empty hands. And that's what gives you more peace, more joy also. In other words, it's like what Mahatma Gandhi says, simple living, high thinking.
Yes, very
and
true.
And that makes it very fulfilling, you know.
Yes, yes.
Sealing on desires, which Swami talked about, this is one way to come down on your empty
baggage.
Hands.
Yes, yes.
Baggage.
Yes.
And surrender. Ultimately, when you get to know more of Swami, you surrender more to Him, little by little, and that makes it the hands more and more empty, because you come with the open, receptive mind at that stage. And then the Swami is able to do something with you.
So when we come with empty hands to Sai, what is Swami going to fill up our hands with?
Yeah. And my poem, I will try to tell that. It says,
sure.
Where Kama is, Rama is not.
Yes.
No fusion.
Yes.
Let go, let God. Is ego's true submission. When God takes over you completely, return with hands brimming overflowingly. Come to me with empty hands. Palms brimming with compassion to strengthen. Patience, forbearance, courage to embolden. Equanimity, charity, forgiveness to energize. Fearlessness, purity, sense control to actualize. Come to me with empty hands. This is what we are supposed to get from Swami, you know.
Yes, when we go to Him with empty hands.
Yes,
that's
yes.
Very true. You know, there is this famous story of a Zen master where, I hope I remember the story right, where this, the master pours tea or something like that to the disciple's teacup, and he keeps pouring and it just spills, overflows. And he says, Master, what are you doing? It's already full. Why are you pouring it? The master says, it is the same thing with you. You come with your head full of all these thoughts, ideas, and your own, you know, all this stuff. And how am I supposed to give you? How are you? Where do you have space to receive anything? What I give? You should come to me with empty hands, as you said, just rightly pointed out.
That's right. That's a very good example.
Beautiful poem. So now, before we go to the second poem, let's take a musical break now. Dear listeners, stay tuned. We'll be back with more beautiful poems after this musical break.
Oh,
Dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Sofkur of Radio Sai, and we are discussing his poetry. How poetry, like music and other art forms, is such a great tool in connecting with our divine self. So, sir, the next poem that we have chosen for today's program is the poem, Oh, When Lord Sai Passes By.
Right.
So, I will read the first few paragraphs and then you can let the listeners know what the whole poem is all about. The poem goes thus, all agog with excitement, hush befalls, ruffling saris, attires, adjustments all. At vantage points, groups poised set, glistening eyes wide, craning necks yet. Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. Embellished with great charm, eclat finis, in Sai's darshan for the eager thronging masses, dotting upon his every glance nuance word, drinks deep the surging, rapturous crowd. Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. Electrified, polarized air, high-end discharges, thronging heads uplift, pulsating, pin-drop silences. Gazing at the wondrous face is soul's very balm. Visage filled with grace, compassion, deep calm. Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. And the poem goes on and on. Sir, you have so beautifully and quite comprehensively, I must say, captured the different sights and sounds and scenes and different emotions that people experience during that one wondrous darshan of Swami. So, please tell us more about this poem. How does the poem continue?
Yeah. This first darshan of mine in 1965, way back, brought about several emotions and feelings within me.
Yes.
And that has been responsible to a great extent on my composing this poem.
Okay.
Because it's, and many of the devotees also will tell you, the first darshan happens to be the most impressive darshan, you know. It need not be that you have to speak to him or you have to touch him or anything. It's just the vision that the darshan conveys, you know, that itself is of great impact. And you feel many of the things we feel I try to put on paper. And mostly objective also and partly subjective feelings. He say, Sai's vision envelops all in divine embrace.
Yes.
Encompassing loving glances, smiles, grace. His penetrating, soul-searing, soul-bearing stare, Lord's face changes to varied hues, dark to fair.
Yes.
Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. A scowl, a smile, a lighted luminous eye, changing fortunes, expectations, an all-time high. Sai charm, sheer magnetism holds one spellbound. Myriad enthralled devotees, steaming bees all around. Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. So we have tried to say how it affects not only me, the others around, men, women, children. Each one has got his own experience of this.
Yes, beautiful, beautiful. Yes. Wonderful. Actually, as the last paragraph says, when Lord Sai passes by, oh, when Lord Sai passes by, kaleidoscopic experiences too numerous to describe. Behold glorious darshan, nectar to freely imbibe. Oh, when Lord Sai passes by. I mean, that is very true. There's so many, each person, like thousands of people are there, and each person will have his own personal experience or his own personal take-home message from one darshan. So it is way too many to put in a few paragraphs of a poem, but you have, I feel you have done a great job in writing this poem, because this is so beautiful to read. It really takes you back to those wonderful darshan days.
Thank you, yeah.
So maybe now I can ask you, can you please share with us your first darshan experience?
Oh, yeah. It was at Vrindavan, that was first darshan.
Which year was this, sir?
1965.
Wow, okay.
When I was 20 years old.
So. Okay.
And I happened to be there with my father. So my father had already been earlier to Parthi. So I was interested also. And somehow the first darshan was so exhilarating, what you call, you know, so joyous feelings. And I for the first time I felt that I was in the presence of something out of this world.
Yes.
That you don't normally feel that kind of feeling when, even if you meet a great man or great person. So, immediately it was love at first sight, you might say. That total surrender is possible only in such cases. And the auspicious feelings, you know, seem to have wiped out all my baser desires from at that instant.
Wow.
It looked as if I had my lower types of instincts and desires, which you have, you know, as a young man. They seem to be just swept away. Felt like a clean, new, young, light man.
When you had your
I thought I had grown younger by at least 7-8 years.
Wow, wow, okay.
Back to my teens, you know. Yeah. That is the kind of youthful feeling I developed, you know, like reborn, you know, refreshed.
Yes, yes.
I mean, you just can't express it easily.
Yes. Sir, other than your first darshan, which is your most memorable or most memorable, beautiful darshan experience with Swami? Or did Swami speak to you any time? Which is the most memorable?
Oh, yeah. The second one was when he gave me an interview.
Uh-huh. Wow. You also received an interview.
Yeah.
Okay. This was in the same year or much later?
Same year, 1965, Dasara time.
Okay.
I came.
Uh-huh.
At that time, the Indo-Pak war was going on. And there were no blackouts. There were blackouts.
Okay.
And in a dream, Swami came, told me the date when I should come here. See? And I was surprised because people kept saying that this blackout is there, there won't be any Dasara celebrations anywhere in India.
Okay.
But since Swami told me, I went ahead and booked my ticket. And the day I left for Parthi, the government of India had removed the blackout.
Wow.
It was Swami's will actually, yes, that Dasara should be celebrated. And no pack war. There was a peace accord, I think, at that time. And when I came, I had a good opportunity to see the Dasara celebrations of those days, which was quite very grand. Although Purnachandra Hall was not there, we had this shed there in its place. And that was being utilized for all the yajnas and programs. And after the celebrations, Kasturi announced that since the crowds are very large, there won't be any interviews.
Okay.
For the next 10 days.
Okay.
So many people left after that, you know, immediately. But something told me to stay on. I continued to stay. Although I had finished off all my money, I was in bad shape that way.
Were you working that time? No, you are.
No.
You are still a student.
Yeah, I just graduated.
Okay.
So, I stayed on, and the second day Swami calls us for interview. Of course, the crowds were less. Within a day or two, many of them had left. And that interview was one of the most significant things to happen in my life.
Do you mind sharing anything from that interview?
Oh, yeah. Well, the beautiful thing is Swami is always the teacher. And he was an ego buster, I would call, buster. See, and whatever false ideas, notions we have about ourselves, you know, they are completely made to be given up by Swami. I told him, he asked me, where are you coming from? I said, Bombay. First thing he says, oh, Bombay boys, they go to pick cinemas, they read novels.
Okay.
So that was a big shock for me.
Okay.
And I immediately realized that this was not a place where he's going to praise me, or, you know.
Yes.
And he was always on the lookout for person's sadhana or his evolution. And he told me a few things, but after all, that was the type of things you should tell a youngster, you know, on the threshold of his life, how to be more spiritual in outlook, because that is a brahmacharya stage, and that is a stage which is going to lay the foundation for your future life. As Baba says, brahmacharya is the foundation, then vanaprastha is the walls, and then roof and things like
that, you know,
construction of that. So he really banged me, I would say, in a way, but with the idea that I will, we will all improve, basically. And then he said, come. And he climbed two of the stairs, you know, that winding staircase he had. And when I came close, he embraced me.
Wow.
He got up two stairs because I was taller.
Okay.
And then he embraced me and blessed me, gave vibhuti and things like that. And he knew that he had succeeded where no amount of studies and books would have helped me.
Yes. I guess after all the scoldings that you got, Swami made up by giving you an embrace.
No hard feelings.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
So, because you came in the 1960s, maybe I can ask you this. How was it to come to Prashantinilayam during 1960s?
Oh, yeah, it's quite tough. You see, we used to stay under the trees. And right from Dharmavaram, we used to hire a bus.
Okay.
Rickety old buses were running once in 2 hours, once in 3 hours.
Okay.
From Dharmavaram railway station, we had to come to the Dharmavaram bus stand in a jatka or horse carriage.
Okay.
From there, after waiting 2 hours, you'd get a bus which is full, almost full, and you had to come standing or with your baggage and some. And the bus would trudge along slowly with its heavy weight.
Yeah.
Sometimes breaks down. And then finally you arrive at Prashantinilayam. It was not too bad compared to the people who came in the 50s. Who crossed the Chitravati.
Yes, of course.
Yeah. In our case also, when we came to Chitravati, we had to get down and walk the distance. The bus, empty bus would come across. So it was quite an experience in those days, living under the trees.
Wonderful. So dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing poetry, how poetry like music and many other art forms is such a great tool in connecting with our divine self. Stay tuned, we'll be back with more amazing poems and music. Thank you.
ദിവാഹനാ നടരാജനമോ ദിവാഹനാ നടരാജനമോ പാലലോചന ശിവരാജനമോ പാലലോചന ശിവരാജനമോ നന്ദിവാഹന നടരാജനമോ പരമൈശ ജഗദീശ നമോ പരമൈശ ജഗദീശ നമോ ശിവശക്തി പരതീശ നമോ ശിവശക്തി പരതീശ നമോ ഭോലെ ബാബ സായി നമോ ഭോലെ ബാബ സായി നമോ നന്ദിവാഹന നടരാജനമോ പാലലോചന ശിവരാജനമോ നന്ദിവാഹന നടരാജനമോ പരമൈശ ജഗദീശ നമോ ശിവശക്തി പരതീശ നമോ ഭോലേ ബാബ സായിശ നമോ സായിശ നമോ നന്ദിവാഹന നടരാജനമോ
Welcome back, dear listeners. In the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao, Sadhguru of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poetry, especially from the book that he wrote in 2011, titled Set Sail with Sai. So the next poem that we have is titled Wait, Wait, Sit, Sit. And the poem goes thus, Often here at Darshan time, Sai's word to devout, Wait, Wait, Sit, Sit. As Sai manoeuvres his way about. Says Milton, they also serve who stand and wait. What impact does this have, pray on one's mind, faith? Wait, wait, sit, sit, says Sai. Unfailing impact, no doubt, such imposition. Wait from Sai has various connotations. It could be wait for a few hours, days, weeks, months or years away. Wait, wait, sit, sit, says Sai. One must patiently wait the voice to heed. Patience is all the strength a man needs. Words unfaltering and thought-provoking must obey implicitly the words imposing. Wait, wait, sit, sit, says Sai. Few relish the unflinching patient wait at start. Wait mantra unfolds wonders if taken to heart. Invokes patience, forbearance, introspection, unfathomable depth, serenity, peace, deification. Wait, wait, sit, sit, says Sai. So this in Telugu, of course, Swami would say kurcho, that means sit.
Yes.
And, you know, this waiting period is not really new to us, especially Sai devotees. We have heard of the waiting boys, some of the students who pass out from Swami's university, and some of them would stay back just to get instructions from Swami as to what they should do in their lives. And some of these boys have even waited for 8 to 9 years, just staying in Prashantinilayam, waiting for Swami's instructions. And of course, you have also heard of countless stories of devotees to whom Swami has said, wait. I mean, even Professor Anil Kumar, I hear, has had to wait for 8 years before Swami spoke to him. So, we understand that with Swami, we will never know how long the duration of the waiting is. Sometimes it is just a day, sometimes it is a week, a month, it could be run 2 years. But we know that everything happens at exactly the right time as it should. So, what are your thoughts on this waiting period? What is Swami trying to teach his devotees by saying wait or kurcho?
Yes, this is a very I would call it a maha mantra from Swami.
Wow, okay.
And even if you go through our scriptures and ancient rishis,
yes,
you come across some of these incidents of waiting.
Okay.
For example, Janaka, King Janaka, was told to wait by Ashtavakra.
Yes, I've heard, yes. Please narrate that.
Yes,
some of the listeners would be interested in hearing that story.
Janaka calls Ashtavakra, his guru, you know, with great regard for him. He asks him, can you give me enlightenment? He said, yes, you should give me enlightenment by the time I climb up this horse.
Okay.
That much of seconds.
Yes.
He says, okay, if you only agree to do what I tell you. Janaka says, I am all for it, whatever you say. So Ashtavakra takes him into a forest. Only two of them, you know. And he initiates him as his disciple. And he is made to sit at his feet. And he surrenders himself, actually, to the guru. And guru says, give me your mind. Sit here and wait. And the guru walks out.
Okay.
Give me your mind, he says. That is his dakshina.
Yes.
And Janaka sits on that forest, in that forest, and waits. Ashtavakra does not turn up. Meanwhile, the royal family and the soldier, the army and commanders and ministers are all worried. Where is he disappeared? Then they realize that he has been taken by Ashtavakra somewhere. So they come into the forest in search of him. And they come across this man sitting there in meditation. And the wives and the ministers approach him and say, have you... they call out to the king. And he does not respond. He doesn't talk at all. And finally, they go in search of Ashtavakra, the guru. And they find him somewhere away from the place. They bring him back. Say, what have you done to our king? He's not talking, nothing. Just sitting there. Then Ashtavakra comes and says, O king, get up. And then that's when he wakes up and gets up. And that is a beautiful thing because he says, how can I listen to anybody when I have given up my mind to you? Only you can. Only you can point out things to me and tell me to do whatever I have to do. So that is the kind of surrender of the mind also, not only for body. Surrender of the mental faculties and the physical faculties,
yes,
etc. Everything has to be done to the guru's feet. That is another case of Shirdi Baba.
Yes.
See, Shirdi Baba had a devotee who became famous as Upasani Maharaj at a place called Sakuri, some 30 miles away. This Upasani Maharaj, he belonged to a Brahmin family, I don't know his earlier name, comes to him with a problem. He is a Rajyogi who is practicing pranayama and all, and somehow he goes wrong in these practices. He develops breathing problems. The prana is stuck somewhere.
Okay.
Somebody tells him only Shirdi Sai can help you out. You are in a very advanced stage of pranayama. We are not able to help you. So he comes to Shirdi. And Shirdi Baba makes him sit for 3 days.
Oh.
Yeah. And he gets cured. But that is not all. Then he says, you go to a place, Sakuri, that is 30 miles away from here, and stay there. He says, Swami, I will do that, but what do I do there? Do nothing.
Just sit.
And he sits for years and years and years, until he evolves into that Upasani Maharaj.
Okay, okay, wonderful.
So this thing has got its own internal, it's a silence. You're going into deep silence.
Yes. When you say in one of the paragraphs, you say that sit, a great vakya in itself.
Yeah.
We soon notice to sit is a tapasya, anchorage asana in practice.
Yeah.
Sit still in quietude, in aloneness does tarry, makes faith unflappable, no hurry, busyness worry. Wait, sit, say sai.
Right.
So beautiful, sir, very beautiful. Mm-hmm. So, and the last paragraph of this poem is, sit is silent sitting to still the ungainly mind. Empties it of all dross, the gross to leave behind. A mahavakya, a mahamantra, divine injunction. Sai's benediction for faithful's total emancipation. Wait, sit, says Sai.
Yeah.
It's amazing that you thought of this, because even though we see it happening, we saw it happening almost every day when Swami was there, Swami telling people sit. I personally never gave it so much of a thought as what you have done in this poem. So beautifully you have analyzed this whole process of Swami making people wait. That reminds me, there is a story from Pandharpur, Maharashtra. Now we are talking about God telling the devotee to wait and sit. Well, there is a story when, was it Pundalika?
Pundalika.
That is, he made God wait. He told, I am taking care of my parents right now, so please wait.
Right. That's in reverse.
Yes. Wonderful. So, dear listeners, in the studios with me is Suresh Rao Safkur from Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poetry. Like how poetry, like music, painting or dance or any other art forms, has such a great potential to connect to our divine selves. We'll be right back after this musical break. Stay tuned. We'll be right back with more beautiful poems and music.
Saraswati Gyan Do Ma Saraswati Gyan Do Ma Saraswati Gyan Do Vedya Bodhi Dan Do Saraswati Gyan Do Shanti
In the studios with me is Shri Suresh Rao Safkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poetry, specifically from his book Set Sail with Sai. So the next poem that we have for today is The Call of Mother Sai. And the poem goes thus: Mother Sai's call, the primordial one, shoreless azure ocean, second to none, hails as I ponder, inquire, cogitate, search, beckons me to dive, perchance to merge, reverberates in me, Sai Om Tat Sat Om. Sai's call, mystical, profound, blissful. Sai's vision, crystalline, dazzling, soulful, loosens heart's knots, strings, ropes, bolts, shatters chains of iron, silver, gold, reverberates in me, Sai Om Tat Sat Om. Sai's momentous call, triumphant, blazing, of shining gold with auras dazzling, Uttishta Jagrata, it thunders and glows, draws pilgrims joyously to the Mukti goal, reverberates in me, Sai Om Tat Sat Om. Sai's clarion call, clear, vibrant, loud, unmistakably positive, deeply profound, the lion's roar scatters denizens' brood, flee samsara's forest, animal roots shoots, reverberates in me, Sai Om Tat Sat Om. So this is yet another beautiful poem. So can you please tell the listeners what this poem is all about?
Yes. This is a very subjective type of poem, actually.
Yes.
The call, everyone hears his own call in his own way.
That is very true. Yes, that is very true.
So the call of Mother Sai here is trying to tell us more about what the purpose of the call is. You know?
Yes.
How it can help you evolve further, how it can help you spiritually, how it can help you gain more mental peace, more happiness in life, blissfulness,
yes,
etc.
Yes, yes.
And it is a call the way the rishis have called up in the Upanishads. Uttishta Jagrata, and they say that.
Yes.
And Amrutasya Putraha, and
yes,
all that. These are the commands and calls that given by the rishis, that you are none other than the Supreme Being, the Supreme Consciousness itself.
Yes, yes.
Advaitic statements, you know. And when Sai, Swami's call is nothing short of that, it is also the same level. In fact, it is the avatar's call,
see, yes,
to all,
yes,
to join him in his glorious state of being. So I tried to express this in various ways, as seen by various people, how they take it as a call. And people do, their lives are changed because they have acceded to this call, see, and their life is glorified and changed for the better. And that is the beautiful thing about the call here.
Sir, you so beautifully says in one of the paragraphs, mm-hmm. you say, Sai's call know no reason, indomitable. Sai's love seeks no return, immeasurable.
Right.
Sai prunes, polishes, makes heart habitable. Sai's benign grace shears all limits, delectable. Reverberates in me, Sai Om Tat Sat
Right.
Om. That's so beautiful. So, his call, it is not for any particular, it's for everyone. His love, it's for everyone. There is no reason, there is no season, there is nothing. Now the question is, you know, Swami always says that he is always in you, around you. So his message, his voice is always reverberating in each and every person's heart. But many times people still fail to notice this. Why do you think people very easily miss listening to Swami's voice if it is so easily available?
It is so easily available, but we are complex beings. The call is simple.
Yes.
Simple to the absolute simplicity.
Yes.
But then people are not so simple as to receive it. There is a lot of cluttering of the mind, agitations in the mind, restlessness, you know. And the mind is wheeled. Mind has got so many defects, weaknesses.
Yes, yes.
Avarna, we call it vikshepa and so many things like agitations of the mind and wheel, sort of a scum. It's compared to a lake.
Yes, correct.
Lake has got, you put a stone into it, you get ripples, you know.
Yes,
so each thought is a ripple on the mind. Then it has got a scum on the surface layer, that is a wheel, sort of wheel which blinds you to the truth behind. See? And then the water itself may be muddy. Mala.
Yes.
So mind has got these three weaknesses created by man himself. And his duty to see that he clears it of its impurities.
Yes. True, true, true.
So unless that is done, the call cannot be heard clearly and loudly.
Very true.
It gets distorted, it gets confusing, it gets weak in signals. So we miss seeing Swami's voice. In fact, that is the voice of the Atman within. In one of these poems I wrote on Satyakama, I think we mentioned.
We did mention that poem in our last week's show.
Yes. He, Satyakama, starts communicating with all around him. He says the bull speaks to him, the deer speaks to him, and the swan speaks to him. But actually it is the voice within, it is all-pervading Atman that he hears. And he thinks it comes from this animal or that bird or so on. So this voice of Swami is like that. It comes from the Atman. Only Swami is a representative of the inner Atman outside.
Yes, yes.
And unless we purify our hearts, the inner Atman cannot speak to us.
Very true.
And so also the outer Atman, that is in the form of Sai, is unable to communicate with us.
Very true, sir. Swami also says that his grace or his word, his love, is always available. It is like a broadcasting station. Now, unless each and every individual learns to tune his mind or heart to that particular frequency, all you're just hearing is noise.
Yes.
And once you can tune to that, to Swami, then he is always available for you.
He says, the winds of grace are always flowing,
but
the sailor has to put his sails.
Yes, yes.
Suppose the sails are closed, there is no use.
Correct.
Yes. It has to be opened and fitted in the proper direction, and the wind will take the ship.
Beautiful.
So the grace, winds of grace are always there, right, when you say that.
Wonderful, sir. Mm-hmm. So, dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Saufkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poems, specifically from his book, Set Sail with Sai. Stay tuned, we'll be right back after this musical break with more poems and more music.
ಶರಣ್ಯ ದೀನಾನಾಥ ದೀನ ಶರಣ್ಯ ದೀನಾನಾಥ करुणा सागर साई बाबा
करुणा सागर साई बाबा
करुणा सागर साई
करुणा सागर साई
सीता रामा राधे राधे श्यामा
राधे श्यामा
साई सुंदर रामा
साई सुंदर रामा
साई वेश धरे तुम माया मानुष वेश धरे तुम जय लीला धर साई बाबा जय लीला धर साई दीन शरण्या दीनानाथ करुणा सागर साई बाबा करुणा सागर साई सीता रामा राधे श्यामा साई सुंदर रामा वेश धरे तुम जय लीला धर साई बाबा जय लीला धर साई ಶರಣ್ಯಾ ದೀನಾನಾಥ
ವೆಲ್ಕಮ್ ಬ್ಯಾಕ್ ಡಿಯರ್ ಲಿಸ್ನರ್ಸ್ ಇನ್ ದ ಸ್ಟುಡಿಯೋಸ್ ವಿತ್ ಮೀ ಈ ಶ್ರೀ ಸುರೇಶ್ ರಾವ್ ಸಾಫ್ ಕೂರು ರೇಡಿಯೋ ಸಾಯ್ ಅಂಡ್ ಟುಡೇ ವಿ ಆರ್ ಡಿಸ್ಕಸಿಂಗ್ ಪೊಯೆಟ್ರಿ ಹೌ ಪೊಯೆಟ್ರಿ ಲೈಕ್ ಮೆನಿ ಅದರ್ ಆರ್ಟ್ ಫಾರ್ಮ್ಸ್ ಲೈಕ್ ಮ್ಯೂಸಿಕ್ is such a great tool in connecting to our inner selves. So the next poem that we have for today is The Call of the Rishis. So I will read the first few paragraphs of the poem and then you can tell the listeners what this poem is all about. And this poem goes thus, Rishis strode upon fair soil of Aryavarta, fearless lions in the forest of samsara, burning all dualities and dross away, saw divinity in all they witness survey. The Rishi presence sanctified the world. Only the noble free transmute the bound. With sense controlled, mind annihilation, were voices of freedom, love, illumination. Purified by Jnana's fire, beacon lights did shine. Epitomes of Viveka, Vairagya, the sages illumined. I and mine vanished. Vanish in a blaze. Life as dream realize, so abideth unfazed. Enchantress Maya sheds unlocks hold. What Rishis said, did, exemplary to behold. Bliss, more bliss and ever more bliss rife, drank deep the ambrosial fount of life. And the poem goes on. So, why don't you tell us what this poem is all about?
Yeah, this is a based on the what Swami has told us about our Upanishads and the Rishis of old and the greatness of these Rishis, you know. It is something that we as a Bharatiyas should be proud of, that our culture, our heritage is with the Rishis. And we are still identifying ourselves with our Gotras, yes, you know, and our lineage. Say somebody is from Bharadwaj Gotra, Vashishta Gotra, Kaunsha Gotra, Kaushik Gotra, that is Vishwamitra Gotra.
Yes.
We are proud of the fact that we belong to these Rishis. And even though we are in a very much degenerated state in this yuga, we still have that, connection with our ancient Rishis and seers. And therefore we are still Bharatiyas and we have to be proud of our culture and heritage and try to strive to live up to their ideals. See? And this is what the Rishis, I felt that this is what the Rishis have been telling us through the ages, you know. And it is up to us to feel responsible and take it up as a challenge. And Swami has always been there to help us out, to understand. So I put it in a bit of a fiery tone, I think.
Okay, okay.
I say that, in the end I say, today's world needs this tonic of the soul. More than ever, Sai's potent words, the source. Vedic Rishi's ideal, beauty in Sai epitomized. Love, perfection, freedom in Sai personified.
Yes.
So, blissfully drowned in spirit's nectar, that is the Rishis. Inspired genius in music, arts, architecture. Home for sacred texts, stotras, epics, poetry. Glorious culture, aesthetics of Arya country.
Wonderful lines. Sir, also in one of the paragraphs of this poem you say, Say Sai, serve others, thus serve yourself. Help others and you serve the one self. Hurt others, you hurt own manifestation. World is resound, reaction, reflection. Work for the good of the many. Om Tat Sat. Work for the welfare of the many. Satchit Ananda. So, here Swami is talking about working for others. So in your opinion, what do you think service is? What is the attitude with which we should serve others?
Yeah, I mean, what the Rishis have been telling us is that there is no other.
Okay.
See, this oneness is what they have been stressing all along, okay, in Advaitic parlance.
Yes, yes.
There is no other. There is, yes, only the one.
Yes.
Without a second.
Yes.
So, in that case, service becomes natural because it is, you are not serving somebody else, you are serving your own self in different manifestations. So that spirit has to be cultivated first, you know, before the realization can come. And all seva activities are done for that purpose.
Yes, yes.
That we may rise to that level when there is only one.
Yes.
See, the sense of doership will vanish, the sense of service will vanish, the I will vanish. And that is when the three merge, they say. The experiencer, the act of experiencing, and the object experienced. There are no separate dualities there. It is only one. And the moment they merge, you are in that state of samadhi or super consciousness.
Yes.
So service has to lead us to that kind of chitta shuddhi or purification, which ultimately will give you that experience, that Advaita Darshana Jnanam, Swami says. It's all aimed at oneness.
Yes.
Aimed,
yes,
at realizing the oneness. And to that extent, I think our Rishis have been very, very bold and very, very highly evolved and realized this aspect of oneness. You know. And they say, not only we, you also are that, but you are not strive to understand it. So
it's like how Swami says, I am God, but you too are God. Just that I know that I am God, but you have not realized it yet.
So all this ball game, all this acrobatics is to only realize that oneness, that you are God. See? Of course, not all religions believe that way.
Yes.
In some other religion, if you say you are God, they will chop off your head.
Yes, yes.
It's only here in the Vedic scriptures and in our culture that such high noble thoughts of oneness with God are exemplified. And the Upanishads talk of nothing else except this realizing this oneness, your immortal state.
Yes, very true.
Mrityogma amritam gamaya.
Yes.
From death to immortality. Otherwise, where is immortality if there is only death? So, the rishis also say amritasya putra, because you are also that immortal self, child of immortality. So I tried to put in these noble thoughts of the rishis in my own little way. And
I heard that once, I heard this from another devotee, that once when one of the devotees had asked Swami, that Swami, what is the greatest service that I can do? Then Swami replied that the greatest service that you can do is to be self-realized, to know yourself.
Yeah, that's right. Yes. That is the greatest service, because... that's the ultimate thing.
True. Also, when you said there is no other, so obviously, if you are helping, when you help yourself to attain that state, obviously you are helping everybody else. Yes, you are helping the world.
Yes, yes.
That's very true.
That's, people say that, you know, what is the purpose, what is the use and all that. But there is the greatest use of that realization.
Yes. So all the seva that you do, the physical seva that you do, like by serving, gram seva, everything. Finally, everything, the bhajans that you do, everything should lead to that.
To lead to that, yes. Ultimate analysis, that's the ultimate truth.
That's
and
true.
That's the end of all sadhana also.
Yes, that is the end of all sadhana.
Yeah.
So, dear listeners, in the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poetry. Stay tuned, we will be right back with more beautiful poems and songs after this short musical break.
सुनो प्रभु साई नाथा
सुनो प्रभु साई
नाथा अरज सुनो प्रभु साई अब स्वामी दर्शन दो अब स्वामी दर्शन दो अब स्वामी
खड़ा हूँ
सखा तुम स्वामी प्राण सखा तुम स्वामी अरज सुनो प्रभु साई नाथ दर्शन दो अब स्वामी
दर्शन दो अब स्वामी
अरज सुनो प्रभु साईनाथ तुम स्वामी प्राण सखा तुम स्वामी अरज सुनो प्रभु साई नाथ
Welcome back, dear listeners. In the studios with me is Sri Suresh Rao Savkur of Radio Sai, and today we are discussing his poetry. Sir, the time is running out. We have another 15 minutes to go, and we are, so possibly this will be the last poem that we are going to discuss today. And this poem is titled, Your Mukti is Not Your Own, says Sai. And the poem goes thus, Mukti is the goal, Mukti is the goal, no I and mine, how can it be your own? For it is in giving that we receive, in giving and forgiving we are redeemed. Your mukti is not your own, says Sai. My mukti, a misnomer, misinterpretation, fells the individual into pits of desolation. Service before self, motto, love all, serve all. Subjugation of ego alone brings vanity's fall. Your mukti is not your own, says Sai. Mukti is freedom from the self, attachments, desires, power, pelf. Ego strips, jumps, bums its concomitants. The I, me and mine, follies of jiva, ignorant. Your mukti is not your own, says Sai. Grace descends through divine intervention, not by prescription or by subscription. One bereft of discrimination of our pure heart, seeking sense pleasures misses mark for sure. Your mukti is not your own, says Sai. And the poem goes on. Sir, why don't you tell us more about this poem?
Yeah, this label I have given you, Mukti is not your own, was once mentioned by Swami Vivekananda.
Yes.
And actually it struck me, what does it actually mean? You know? Then ultimately you see that there is no such thing as my Mukti and your Mukti. It is actually... I and mine should not come into the picture in
yes,
the first place.
Correct,
see?
Yes, yes.
So, mukti is independent of the ego and the lower self.
Yes.
And I tried to explain that in my own way.
Okay. Would you like to read a few paragraphs in the poem, sir?
Yeah, yeah. For example, it says, "My nirvana, my salvation, heaven sent. Man skips true means, misses a worthy end. Right thoughts, purity, surrender, alone lands the myrobalan fruit of on the palm of one's hand." See, in the Upanishads it mentions, you can have mukti just like you see the fruit on your palm.
Yes.
that phrase, myrobalan fruit on your palm, that's what I have used as evidence of the fact. See, when Swami says, I want peace, he says, give up I, that is ego, want, that is desire.
Yes.
Similarly, when you say, I want mukti, the same thing applies.
Okay.
Give up ego, I, and want desire, and yes, you have mukti. See?
Very
so
true.
There's no such thing as my mukti.
Yes, yes, yes.
It is mukti per se, you see. And, it's like how to get rid of this ego and things like that. Swami gives a beautiful example of the salt doll who wants to measure the depth of the ocean. It is like you trying to gain mukti, you know,
yes,
like the salt doll,
yes,
going into the depth of the ocean to measure the...
And as it goes down, it just dissolves
it just
itself
dissolves
into the ocean.
It loses its name and form. See?
Yes.
Mukti is nothing but going beyond Maya, and Maya is nothing but name and form.
Yes, yes, yes.
So when he dissolves his ego and he dissolves individuality and the jiva, sense of jivahood, everything has to dissolve. And that creates a lot of fear.
True, true.
Suppose I have to give up everything, I have to become nothing. The fear of nothingness is there.
Yes.
That is why people don't take the plunge.
Yes.
So mukti cannot come easily just without your... overriding the fears and with great courage.
Sir, I'm reminded of something that I read on Radio Sai.
Mm-hmm.
There is an interview with Mrs. Rani Subramaniam,
yeah,
or Ranima as she was known. So she came to Bhagwan in the early 1950s,
yeah,
and
yes,
there is an incident that she shared with us on Radio Sai,
yeah,
and where her sisters and herself, when asked by Swami, "What do you want?" they all said, "Swami, I want bhakti and mukti," you know. And Swami told them, you know, it is not very easy, but that if that is what they want, really want, then he will give that to them. And after this incident, this Ranima says, apparently Swami had come to her dream and said, "Ranima, do you know what you are going to pass through? You have asked for bhakti and mukti. I am going to treat you like a wet towel, just like one rinses the towel to take out water. I will squeeze you out. Will you be able to take it?" She replied, "Yes, Swami." And Swami says, "Okay, but you are in for great tests." You know?
Yes.
So, mukti is not exactly a bed of roses, the path to liberation. Even though in one hand people say, or Swami even says that mukti is very simple. It's, you know, it's very simple to get. But from experience and from the stories of so many devotees, we know it's not exactly a bed of roses. So why does Swami say your mukti is not your own? And why do you think Swami says that it is difficult to attain mukti?
Yeah, because the world is very much with us. And attachments come with it. Body, sense of body, consciousness comes with it. And you're talking about mukti. It's like a fish who is in water all the time.
Yes.
Says, "I want to be a bird and fly in the sky," without knowing what the sky is.
Yes, yes.
A bird, a fish is always in the water. It doesn't know what the sky is. And he's saying, "I want to be a bird and fly in the sky," without knowing what he's talking. Similarly, we go to Swami and say, "I want mukti." It looks very glamorous.
Yes, yes, yes.
Like I want to be a film star maybe.
Yes. Sure.
But it is not that kind of life at all. And with enjoyments it won't come, because mind gets numb with enjoyment, senses get numb with enjoyment. That clarity, that viveka doesn't develop with enjoyments. So you have to go through sufferings.
Yes.
Suffering is what opens up your mind. Sufferings is what trains you to control the senses, the mind.
True.
And it's a hard job actually. It is hard work, because you are going in the opposite direction.
Okay.
The world is going in one flow,
yes,
and you are going the other way towards,
yes,
the source. So mukti is not that kind of easy thing, and life after life we struggle, strive. And when Swami says it is not going to be easy, he's not telling only Ranima, he's telling all of us that it is not so easy. But then the bhakti marga and the other margas are there, slow but steady margas. And jnana marga, of course, they say is very fast, but it's very hazardous. So when he's telling her this, he's actually telling her that it is a hazardous path you're taking. If you stick to bhakti, gradually you will come to it. But if you want it urgently on this life itself, then you have to struggle for it the hard way, see. And that thing can come only when you have sufficient maturity, sufficient discrimination, sufficient purity. Otherwise it will be very difficult. So fear is what keeps us away from mukti.
Fear of the unknown. Is it fear of the unknown?
Fear of nothingness.
Yes.
Fear of losing my identity.
Yes.
Fear of the losing my ego.
Yes.
You see?
Yes,
true. We are clinging to it for life after life, you know, and it has become part of us system. And to give it all up is not an easy thing. I mean, you may say, I want to give up and all that, but it's not so easy.
I think it is, one of the reason is because of that fear of the unknown, because everything we know in this world, we know through our senses and our mind and our intellect, and that's how we analyze and we live in this world. So suddenly we are going to liberation, means there is no senses, there is no mind,
gone beyond.
Even though it's the scriptures and everybody says that is the highest bliss is in liberation, or that is the life's purpose, still I think people are scared because of the fact that it is the fear of the unknown. What will happen if you can't imagine yourself without your senses and the mind and the intellect
and your body
and the body and everything. You're basically dissolving yourself in the ultimate.
Probably this is the kind of experience that Raja Harishchandra had, you know, when he was challenged by Vishwamitra.
Can you please narrate that story, sir?
Yeah. Harishchandra was a great king, very dharmic and very righteous. And people were very happy under him, you know. And then one day Vasishtha and Vishwamitra are talking about Raja Harishchandra, the great king. And Vasishtha says there is no other person as dharmic and as righteous as Harishchandra. Vishwamitra takes it as a challenge.
Okay.
He says, I will prove to you that he is not as dharmic as you say. And he goes there with the idea of testing Harishchandra with all kinds of sufferings. See, that is the test. And you know, he goes there and Dakshina he asks that he must give me your kingdom and give me everything. You become a pauper actually. And Harishchandra goes with his wife and son as a pauper into the world, trying to sell himself as a slave just to manage his family. And goes through all types of sufferings. His son also dies in the... And the wife brings the child to him for cremation. He says, I cannot cremate the child without giving the dues to my master.
Yes.
And she says, don't you recognize me? I am your wife and he is your son. He's shocked, but he says, no, I cannot do it without your payment. And so on, he's tested until the last breath of his life, you know. And finally, Vishwamitra comes back and gives him all his happiness, his kingdom, everything. He says, you have won the test.
Yes.
So
yes.
Suffering is what has made him go through this.
True.
It's like gold going through the crucible.
Correct.
Yes. Red hot, and then you apply it and malleable, it becomes in you.
And that's when it becomes a beautiful ornament.
Beautiful object.
It's the same as diamond. It's the same as diamond. Same with everything.
So that is a precious Atman, is a diamond actually.
Yes. True.
Swami says, diamond yields you the diamond of Atman.
Very true.
So it's all in the mind actually. We have to rise above our failures, weaknesses.
Dear listeners, the time in the studios is 3:27 and it is almost time for us to wrap up the show. At 3:30 we will have the live Telugu show, Sri Satya Sai Divya Sandesha Jari, hosted by Brother Sai Prasad. And so as we are running out of time, we are wrapping up this show with this last poem, Your Mukti Is Not Your Own. And So this is Chandu Vijay signing out with a prayer. May all the beings in all the worlds be happy, happy and happy. Until I see you next week, Jai Sai Ram.
மனோஜவம் மாருத துல்ய வேகம் ஜிதேந்திரியம் புத்தி மதாமரிஷ்டம் வாதாத்மஜம் வானரயூதமுக்கியம் ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம் பிரபத்யே ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம் பிரபத்யே ஸ்ரீராமதூதம் சரணம்
வாயு குமாரா வானர வீரா வாயு குமாரா வானர வீரா அதிபலவந்தா அனுமந்தா அதி பலவந்தா ஹனுமந்தா கேசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா கேசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா ஜய ஹோ ஜய ஹோ பவன குமாரா 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 வாயு குமாரா வானர வீரா அதி பலவந்தா ஹனுமந்தா கேசரி நந்தன அஞ்சனி புத்ரா ஜய ஹோ ஜய ஹோ பவன குமாரா 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 வாயு குமாரா வானர வீரா
சுந்தரவதனா கோபாலா శ్రీ సాయిరాం లవ్ టు లవ్ కార్యక్రమం ద్వారా శ్రావ్యమైన పాటలతో స్వామి ప్రేమతత్వాన్ని మనందరికీ ఎంతో చక్కగా తెలియజేసిన బ్రదర్ చందు విజయ్ కి ధన్యవాదాలు. మీరు ప్రస్తుతం రేడియో సాయి ప్రతి గురువారం ప్రశాంతి నిలయం నుండి అందిస్తున్న ప్రత్యక్ష ప్రసారాలను వింటున్నారు. మరికొద్ది క్షణాల్లో మీరు రేడియో సాయి తెలుగు ప్రత్యక్ష కార్యక్రమాలను వింటారు. అంతవరకు రేడియో సాయి గ్లోబల్ హార్మోనీకి ట్యూన్ అయి ఉండండి.
శ్రీ సాయీశం దయానిధిం సనా